Good afternoon. I'd like to start off by thanking my good friend Pamela Rose for inviting me from Jerusalem. I live in the old city of Jerusalem. How many of you have been to Jerusalem? Okay, so great. So I live inside those walls like that in a 900-year-old house. Invited to come visit, and I'll show you a capital of a pillar we found inside the bathroom wall when we were renovating the bathroom. The pillar is 1,400 years old from the 6th century. So I'm happy to be here because I've lived in Israel for the last 23 years. Israel has a reputation of sending top rescue teams whenever there is a disaster, like a natural disaster anywhere in the world. Earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunami. Israel has the reputation of having the best rescue teams. Unfortunately, our history of war and terror attacks has qualified us to have like the top-notch rescue teams, rescue technology, well-trained rescue teams in the world. Having been in America now for about 8 or 9 days, I came on a 3-week speaking tour. I feel like I'm an Israeli rescue team sent to a natural disaster. Although it's not a natural disaster, but it is a disaster, the financial disaster. So that's where I'm coming from, is to offer you my spiritual survival strategy for these difficult times. I cannot give you any financial advice. Nobody would ever come to hear Sara Rigler and give financial advice. But I think I am qualified to give you spiritual advice, which might be the only thing that can really be a survival strategy in these times. So my survival strategy has 4 points, and its acronym is the word REAL, R-E-A-L. The first point is redefine your idea of success. Now, it's not just a coincidence that the word depression refers both to a severe financial downturn and to a psychological state of sadness and despair, because this causes this. So if you work for Lehman Brothers and you lost your job, if your goal in life, when we talk about success, we're very much talking about what your goal was. So if your idea of success was professional advancement and you lost your job, you are apt to feel depressed. If your idea of success was financial, amassing a certain amount of wealth, and your portfolio went down by a third in the last month, you are likely to feel depressed. If your idea of success was having certain status symbols, being able to drive a Lexus, vacation in exotic places in 5-star hotels, and the current financial situation means that you're going to have an actual change of lifestyle, you might be likely to be depressed. But you don't have to be, because success is completely dependent on your goal in life. So if your goal is professional advancement and you lose your job, then you have not succeeded, then you have failed. But you can change your goal. When I was a senior in high school, I was voted most likely to succeed in my high school class. I was raised in New Jersey. So the yearbook photographer, when he came to take the yearbook pictures, his idea of success, I was most likely to succeed, his idea of success was to make money. So he posed me. He had made this like pile of dollar bills on the floor, and he bid me like to sit down on the floor reaching for this pile of bills. This is a picture of my high school yearbook. The irony is that in the 42 years since that picture was snapped, I probably made less money than anyone in my high school class. I went to India, I lived for 15 years in an ashram, I live in Israel now. Nobody, the joke is, you know, they say, how do you make a small fortune in Israel? Come with a big fortune. So nobody makes money in Israel. So I've made less money probably than anybody in my graduating class. But I think I have been very successful. The photographer's idea of success was making money. It was never my idea of success. My idea of success was always a spiritual idea. I wanted to be close to God. I think I've succeeded very much. So I don't feel like a failure because I didn't earn money. big sums of money in my life, because we're three drivers in a family with one car, and we bought it used, and it's a Chevy. I don't feel like a failure at all. I feel like a great success. Because, and I'll explain to you later what my concept of success is when I talk about a spiritual goal. But again, it's up to you to define your goals in life. And based on what your goal is how successful or how much of a failure you will feel. Now, most of us don't even take the time and effort to ever define a life goal. We have short-term goals, right? When we're kids in high school, our goal is to get good grades so we'll get into a good college. When we're in college, our goal is to get good grades so we'll get into a good grad school, or a good business school, or a good law school, or a good medical school. We go on from there to have short-term goals in terms of profession. Maybe you want to get married, maybe you want to have children, maybe you want to make $1 million. But virtually all of our goals are short-term goals. Insofar as if anyone asks you, if I ask you now, what is the goal of your life? Could you really answer it? I didn't hear the question. You feel free to tell me. Do you have a goal? What is the goal of your, what is the goal of your life? I think very few of us could actually define it, because we're so used to having short-term goals, we never think in terms of the whole picture. It's a very interesting person named Rabbi Benjamin Blech. He was a rabbi in the New York area for 40 years. When he retired at the age of 65, he had a nest egg of $50,000. And of course, $50,000 isn't nothing, but it's certainly not enough to live on for the next 20 years, he and his wife. So he decided to take the mental acuity he had developed through a lifetime of learning Talmud and apply it to the stock market. And he took his $50,000, and he didn't just invest in a mutual fund. No, he made it his full-time occupation as a retired rabbi to invest in the stock market. He carefully followed each thing. He analyzed the stocks. He turned his $50,000 into $7 million. Pays to learn Talmud. Pays to learn Talmud. He turned it into $7 million. And he used to call his stockbroker 3 times a day. And at one point, his wife said to him, "Why are you always calling the stockbroker so much?" And he said, "To find out how much I'm worth." And no sooner were the words out of his mouth than he realized what he had said. To find out how much I'm worth? I'm worth $7 million? That's what I'm worth? What about my worth as a husband? What about my worth as a father? What about my worth as a teacher, a rabbi, a human being? He ended up losing the $7 million. It turned out he thought he was so smart, but he had come in at the beginning of a bull market. Everything was going up, and when everything eventually went down, he told me, he said, even a rabbi can fall to the sin of the golden calf. Even a rabbi can get greedy. He didn't take out his profits, which was almost everything were his profits. He didn't take out his profits. He was kept, you know, he was on such a run going up that when things went down, he lost almost everything. But then he had a new career. He wrote a book called Taking Stock about how we relate to money. Did you read that book?
I haven't.
Great.
I haven't.
Okay. So he tells that once he became an author on the subject of how we relate to money in terms of life goals, he was invited to speak at various business schools. So he was invited to the business school of Drew University to speak to the MBA students there. Now, MBA students are people whose goal is to make money. They're going to graduate with an MBA, and they're going to become fund managers, and they're going to become, you know, financial advisors, investment bankers, whatever. Their goal is to make money. That's the goal. So he asked them, trying to get them like to think in these terms of short-term goal versus long-term goal, he asked them a question. He said, if I gave you a check for $50 million, what would you do with it? So one woman raised her hand and she said, I would invest it. Well, like it was like they didn't get his drift. He was trying to say, when you've made all the money you want to make, what would you do with it? But all they knew to do with money was make more money. So like, what's the goal? Your goal is to make money. Okay, to make more money, to make more. At what point is there an ultimate life goal at the end of that track? They had never thought of it. Have you? So what I'm suggesting now is to define for yourself a spiritual goal in your life. The problem with material goal is it really is not in your hands. In other words, what's going on now with the markets, you can be, and I'm sure you are, very smart and very skilled and very clever and very everything, and that's not going to save you because it's not in your hands, right? What's happening in the financial markets is not in your hands. A spiritual goal is something you have complete control over. I'm going to explain to you, I'm going to define for you a possible spiritual goal. But first, I have to tell you that if your goal in life is a material goal, then you are investing in chandeliers on the Titanic. Because life in this world is the Titanic. It's not a question of will it sink. It will definitely sink. Life in this world ends only in one place. With the end, at the end of life in this world, after 70, 80, 90 years. So if you will say, look, okay, I know life doesn't go on forever, but yeah, 70, 80 years, as long as I'm here, let me be comfortable. Let me live at a certain standard of living. Let me enjoy the niceties of life. Let me drive a nice car. As long as I'm in this world, let me drive a Lexus. Would anyone say, the Titanic, a first-class ticket on the Titanic, cost in 1912, cost $4,700.
Really?
Yes. In
wow.
Today's economy, it would have been the equivalent of $50,000. It was a very posh boat. Okay? So in today's economy, the equivalent of $50,000. Would anyone say a first-class ticket in the Titanic is a good investment because the staterooms are so luxurious and the public areas are so posh and the food is so gourmet? Would anyone say that a first-class ticket on the Titanic was a good investment? The boat was afloat for 4.5 days. The truth is that every one of us is, in essence, a soul. That's who we are. We are a soul. This is this eternal, immortal, spiritual entity. And we come down into this world, which is the lowest of all possible worlds. And we are given a body, and we are given a mission in life, and we're assigned to this world for this short period, 70, 80, at most 90 years, most of us. And then, when we're finished this short term here, we shed the body, just like we take off our clothes at night and put them in the hamper. We shed the body, and the soul continues, and it goes back up to the world of souls, what we call in Judaism the next world, and continues. The soul is eternal. It's not eternal in both directions. It had a starting point. Souls were created by God at a certain point in time. But your soul will go on forever in this direction. So your life in this world, compared to the lifespan of your soul, is 4.5 days. The time that the Titanic was afloat. Is it really worth investing in a first-class ticket on the Titanic? So I'm suggesting to you to formulate a spiritual goal for your life. So what's a spiritual goal? Various great rabbis over the centuries have given various definitions. They're pretty much, if you analyze them, they all come down to the same thing. But I'm choosing right now what the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon lived in Lithuania in the 1700s. One of the great, great minds that has ever come to this planet, the Vilna Gaon. So the Vilna Gaon said that the purpose of life in this world is to fix your character traits. To fix your character traits. If you're stingy, to become more generous. If you're anger-prone, to become more patient. If you're dishonest, to become more honest. And he said that's the entire reason we come down into this world. Now that's a spiritual goal. That's a spiritual one, to work on your character traits. So we can't fix everything all at once, but like to pick one character trait. We all know what our weaknesses are. To pick one character trait and say, I'm going to work on that. I'm going to work on becoming better in that particular area. That is what I call a spiritual goal. That's what the Vilna Gaon called a spiritual goal. You remember the day in October when the stock market first plunged? I mean, the stock market went like this pretty much in October. But remember the first day when it went down hundreds, the Dow went down hundreds of points per hour? And I saw pictures of traders on the stock market floor going, like the oh no response. Did you have that oh no response when you saw what was happening to your portfolio? Down, 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 like, oh no. If you don't have a spiritual goal to your life, when you get to the next world, and you definitely will get to the next world, you're going to have a big oh no response, because you're going to find that you don't have a pension fund. Okay? You're going to find you don't have a pension fund if you don't have a spiritual goal for your life. So I'm going to quote to you from a book called Be a Mensch that just came out, a chapter by Howard Jonas. Howard Jonas is the founder and CEO of IDT. He's a multi-billionaire.
I need a book. Find a mensch.
find a mensch. Okay. Well, if you give this book to enough men, maybe one of them will be a mensch, you can find a mensch. Okay? So Howard Jonas, who is, by the way, he's also an observant Jew, married, the father of 8 children, he wrote in this book, success in business, I think, comes as the result of a combination of many factors, most of which cannot be controlled. Talent and luck, for example, are God-given. The good news, however, is that good character, which is at least as essential, if not more so, to founding and running a major company, can be developed. He's saying it's in your hands. Persistence, courage, patience, empathy, loyalty, honesty, integrity, kindness, generosity, the ability to cooperate with others. These can all be worked on and cultivated. And then he picks out his favorite character trait. He says, of all these good character traits, though, humility is far and away the most important to develop if you want to succeed in business in a major way. Humility serves me equally well as the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar telecom company. Developing a sense of humility in my teens has literally made and saved me millions of dollars. Now, I'm quoting this to you because Howard Jonas is probably somebody you trust much more than Sara Rigler in terms of advice. But I'm not quoting it to you because he's saying, and what he is saying in this book is that if you have good character traits, if you work on developing good character traits, you could also make a lot of money, and you could also be successful in business. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm making is you take somebody like Howard Jonas, who has billions of dollars. I want to ask you a question. If in this financial catastrophe, that is this global financial meltdown that is happening, if Howard Jonas lost his billions, do you think he would consider himself a personal failure? Do you? Do you think he would consider, if he lost the whole business, if the whole business went under and he lost all his money, do you think he would consider himself a failure? I don't think so. I know I'm good friends with somebody who's good friends with Howard Jonas, and I don't think so. He's a husband, he's a good husband, he's the father of 8 children, he takes that very, very seriously. He has a developed inner life as an observant Jew. I don't think he'd be thrilled to lose all his money, but I don't think he would consider himself a failure, because I don't think that his goal has been to make money. I think his goal has been to develop his character traits, and he's done a very good job of it. So, if your goal is to become more generous or more patient or more honest, or have more integrity, and you succeed in your goal, you will, and when we talk about succeeding, of course, you know, the end always recedes. You never get to the point where now I'm 100% perfect in this character trait. But success is moving toward it. Like, you don't have to own all the money in the world to be successful as a wealthy person. But we know that many places along the way can be considered success. I wrote a book called Holy Woman. And this book is now going into its 9th printing.
It's amazing. Amazing book.
It's amazing. Okay. It's amazing book.
Amazing
okay.
Book.
It's out of print in New York. It's in the printing presses. Now, somehow Rabbi Khan managed to find one copy of it here.
We're going to auction it.
Somebody asked me recently, they said, how does it feel to be a successful author? Well, I had never thought about it. So then, because they asked, I started to think about it. How does it feel to be a successful author? Truthfully, I don't relate to it at all. Literary talent, I was born with. Just like some people are born with artistic talent, or with musical talent, or with athletic talent. I was born with literary talent. It came from God. The fact that I met this incredible person about whom I wrote the book was also engineered by God. I can truthfully say I don't feel any sense of pride and accomplishment about this book. But I was born with a very volatile temper, really bad temper, very anger prone. I used to yell at my kid maybe 2 or 3 times a week. And I had a spiritual goal. My goal was to stop being an angry person. And I worked on it. I joined what's called a Musarvad. I worked with a rabbi with techniques that are like Jewish self-improvement techniques called Musar. And I worked on myself. It takes 2 to 4 years to change a character trait. And now I yell at my kids maybe 2 or 3 times a year. And about that, I feel successful. And I feel proud. That's what it is to have a spiritual goal. It's in nobody's hands but myself, but my own. And about that, that spiritual accomplishment, I feel proud, I feel successful, because I did it. Okay? What happens to your stock portfolio is not in your hands at this point. But what happens to your character traits is, if you make for yourself, my first spiritual survival strategy is redefine your idea of success. Redefine your goals. Make for yourself a spiritual goal. And it's entirely in your hands then if you're going to be successful or not successful. Okay, the second point in my 4-point plan, E. E is establish an inner life. What is an inner life? An inner life is a relationship with God. Now, how do you establish a relationship with God? Well, you know in real estate, I shouldn't be talking, Pam should be talking, in real estate, I mean, everybody knows. There's three principles that define the value of any real estate holding. Number one is location, number two is location, number three is location. Okay. In relationship, in any relationship, there are three factors that determine the success of the relationship. Number one is communication. Number two is communication. And number three is communication. This is true in marriage, this is true with your children, and it's also true in our relationship with God. If you want to establish an inner life, talk to God in your own words, out loud, 5 minutes a day. You all have 5 minutes a day. You're all busy. You don't have, if I said half an hour a day, you could say I don't have the time. 5 minutes a day, out loud, in your own words. I'm not saying don't daven, don't pray from the Jewish Siddur. We have a wonderful prayer book. It is a gold mine of wonderful, beautiful, deep, profound prayers. But in addition to that, or if you don't read Hebrew and the Siddur is not accessible to you, talk to God in your own words 5 minutes a day, out loud. So that means you have to be somewhere alone. So if you have a big, you know, a big yard, you can go outside and walk in your yard. Otherwise, go to your room, go to the dining room. Out loud 5 minutes a day. How does it differ? Talking to God, how does it differ from talking to your psychotherapist? So to your psychotherapist, you say, I'm really afraid I could lose my job. So many people in my company have already been laid off. I'm afraid I could be next. I'm losing sleep over this. And your psychotherapist gives you Prozac and sends you home. But to God you say, I'm afraid I could lose my job. So many people in my company have already been laid off. I'm afraid I could be next. But I know that you run the world. And I know that you're the one who gave me the job in the first place because you run the world. And I know that you can decide whether I will keep my job or lose my job. And that if you will it, I can be the last person in the company that they fire. I know this happened to Rebbitzin Heller's mother. She was during the Great Depression when she worked for B. Altman. They fired everyone else and they kept her. Well, that's another story. Okay. You're talking to God, and you say, I know that you run the world, and if you determine that I should lose my job, please send me another job. And if you determine that I should be spending my time doing something else right now than working, then please make that clear to me, because I know that you've taken care of me my entire life from day one, and I know you love me, and I know you'll continue to take care of me. That's what it sounds like to talk to God. And then you don't need the Prozac. You don't even need the psychotherapist. Okay, you save yourself a lot of money that way. Okay? You have to know one basic thing. And I think that as I've been going around lecturing, and I've so far been, I've been in New York, Miami, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, a number of cities. I think that the reason that this rescue team was sent to the United States in this disaster to talk to Jews here is because I have one basic message that I came to tell you. God loves you. God loves you. When I was a kid growing up and I had Christian friends, one of my Christian friends once said to me, the Jewish God is a God of law, the Christian God is a God of love. Garbage. The Jewish God is a God of love. They got it from us. The Jewish God is a God of love as well as a God of law. Just like if you are, how many people here have children? Okay, so you know if you have children and you love them, you don't let them stay out all night, live off of junk food, spend their times in the video arcade all day long and all night long, not go to school. You know that if you really love someone, you give them parameters for their life. You give them boundaries because that's an expression of your love. The mitzvot of the Torah, which are boundaries, are expression of God's love for us because he wants us to learn how to live right, and that's how to do it. But it all comes from God's love. E stands for establish an inner life. An inner life means a relationship with God. You make any relationship through communication. Talk to God in your own words. I have another suggestion. This, some Rabbi Ephraim Swirsky, who also lives in my neighborhood in the Old City of Jerusalem, recommends this. Start out the day. Okay, we're all busy people. We don't have time. This takes about 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes. Sit down. I mean, I spent many, many years meditating. And everybody knows that meditation is very, very good for calming you, especially in troubled times. This is what Rabbi Ephraim Swirsky suggests. Beginning of your day, before you go to the office, sit down in a chair, sit straight, not cross legs, you know, just sit straight, close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, relax, and say to yourself three things. Number one, God is here now. And feel it. Is it true? Is God here now? We are the monotheists, right? There is no place absent of his presence. God is here now. It's absolutely true. Say to yourself, God is here now, and feel his presence. Number two, say to yourself, God loves me, and feel it. Number three, say to yourself, God loves me unconditionally, and feel it. Now, we don't have time today for me to do the whole explanation of why God loves you unconditionally, no matter what you've done. That's you know, go to Rabbi Kahn and ask him for a whole lecture on that subject. But I'm telling you the facts on the ground, which is that God loves you and he loves you unconditionally and he wants a relationship with you, and for your spiritual survival in these troubled times, establish a relationship with God. It will be your salvation. 3A, add to the time you spend with the people you love. There's something strange going on. As things get worse financially, many people feel they have to work harder, you know, because things are worse financially. The truth is, it could be a wake-up call. Just like when a person gets a heart attack, they often revise their goals in life and decide that instead of spending 12 hours a day at the office, they should spend more time with their families, things like that. People facing life-threatening diseases are very good at redefining their life goals. In these financially troubled times, take it as a wake-up call to spend more time. Add more time with the people you love. If you're married, that means with your spouse. If you have children, that means with your children. If you have a mother and a father alive in the world, give them some time. Give them some time. It's a great thing to do. In Rabbi Black's book, he tells a story, a true story, of a workaholic who used to work long hours. He had a child, 5-year-old little girl, and at some point he was at home and he had to go to this business meeting and he was late and he was rushing, and the little girl said, Daddy, I made a present for you. And she handed him this awkwardly wrapped box. And he said, I don't have time now, I'm late, did it? And she said, Daddy, please, I worked so hard and I spent so much time on this to make you this nice present. So he said, okay. And he ripped it open and opened the box, and there was nothing inside. He said, what are you wasting my time for? There's nothing in here. She said, yes, there is. It's filled with my love. A year and a half later, that child died tragically in an accident. And the father keeps the box that was filled with her love. What good is it to him now? What good is it to him? All the time he could have spent with her had he known. Okay? This life is very short. Even if you live 90 years, it's 4.5 days. We're on the Titanic. Add to the time you spend with the people you love. L, long for the redemption. Jews introduced the concept of linear time. Before we did this, all ancient people, and I get this is not like a chauvinistic Jewish thing that some rabbi wrote. I read this in a book called The Gift of the Jews by a Catholic named Thomas Cahill. Did you read that book, The Gift of the Jews?
Book, yes.
Yes, okay. So it's a wonderful book to see Judaism through the eyes of an outsider. So he explains, the whole world had this idea of circular time, that things go around in circles and circles. And the Jews burst into the world with this idea of linear time. The time has a purpose, and it's going somewhere. So just as we in our individual lives have to have a goal, and because we have a purpose, because our lives are going somewhere, we're not just chasing our tail, so history also has a goal. It's going somewhere. Time is linear. It's moving forward toward the goal, according to Judaism, of what we call the redemption. We call the Geula Shlema, the complete redemption. The complete redemption is one of believing in and anticipating and longing for, L stands for longing for the redemption, is one of the 13 principles of the faith, according to Maimonides, to long for the redemption. So what does it mean to long for the redemption? The redemption is a time when, I mean, there are various opinions even in the Talmud about whether it'll be a time of miracles or a time, whether it be natural law will still adhere. But one thing is sure, it says that the knowledge of God will cover the earth as the waters cover the seas, meaning that it will be the end of the illusion of divine absence. There will be no more ignorance. There will be no more hatred. All the things that come from the illusion of divine absence will be gone. so that it will be a time where there's no more exploitation, no more wars. You know, the famous quotation from Isaiah about beating those swords into plowshares. It comes from knowing the spiritual truth of the universe. When we are going through difficult times, it's very easy, like, to want it to be over. Long for the redemption. Great, does it mean the stock market's going to go up? I'm suggesting that you don't just long for a bull market. Okay? Many of the biggest rabbis in the world are saying that we're getting very close to the redemption. Now, this is good news and bad news. The good news is we're getting very close to the final redemption. We're, thank God, you know, the end of the war and the problems and all of our problems. The bad news is that free choice, the choice to grow spiritually, like I talked about, having a spiritual goal, working on yourself, the choice to grow spiritually can only be made in a world like this when ignorance abounds. We don't see God clearly. We can even entertain the illusion that God is absent from the world. And in that environment, we can truly make the choice to be dishonest or honest. Very basic choice. So if somebody that you respected, or even if a government officer from the IRS was standing right there, you know, you would obviously not cheat on your income tax if somebody was looking over your shoulder. In the presence of whoever, you're not going, there's not even a choice. You're not going to cheat if somebody's watching you. Okay? You're not going to embezzle from the company if the boss is standing over your shoulder looking at your computer. So when the redemption comes, that is the end of the possibilities for spiritual growth. That's what's the bad news. Whatever spiritual growth you have attained when the redemption comes, then it's over because the game is over. It's like there's no opposition. Once the opposition is off the field, it's meaningless to score a goal. Okay? So long for the redemption as this time of true illumination to the world, a time of final peace and where goodness finally will prevail. But realize that there's an end point. And if you want to have an inner life and you want to get to your spiritual goal, you better get to it before that day of the final redemption. So I just want to conclude by, I want to say about this, about the redemption. I don't expect you all like to be sitting there longing for Mashiach, but when you see big changes coming in the world, recognize it. Remember that woman who spoke to you that day at Pam Rose's Lunch and Learn. When you see big things happening, recognize, is this what she meant? Is this the redemption coming?
We got Obama.
What?
We got Obama.
You got Obama, you got a world in financial disarray. Big changes are happening in the world. Keep your eyes open. Recognize the redemption when it's coming. The big rabbis are saying that it's very close. Okay, so I just want to repeat the four R-E-A-L. Redefine your goal in life to have a spiritual goal. E, establish an inner life, establish a relationship with God. A, add to the time you spend with the people you love. And L, long for the redemption. Okay, any questions? Yes.
So this short-term physical goals that somehow get linked into, let's say, with children, right? Have some sort of legacy or whatever. What I'm trying to get at is you have what you might view as a short-term goal, but its intent is for the benefit of your kids and their kids and so on, honorable, spiritual, etc. How do you bridge those two if there's a breakdown in the first one and you feel it as affecting you in the second one?
It's a very good question, and I was thinking of addressing it, and I didn't, and I'm glad you're giving me an opportunity to. Many people, Pam mentioned to me the other day, she said, you know, the loss of money could be the loss of your children's college fund. So, I mean, that's a big loss, right? You need a lot of money to send a child to college in these days. So the loss of your money, you know, it's not so easy to be, you know, rise above it. If it's your child's college fund, let's say. As far as legacy, they can let assume that they can be have what they takes to earn their own money in the future. But let's say their college fund. Okay, my father paid for my college fund. I never went to, you know, didn't work my way through school. I didn't have a scholarship. It's very nice for a parent to be able to pay for their child's college education at a top college. What I'm going to say might be hard for you to hear, but just hear me through. Because of the way I look at the world, and I see that the only goals in life are spiritual goals, which means character refinement and fixing one's character traits. When my daughter, who is now 20, when she was a child, from the time she started going to school, I would say to her, I don't care what grades you get. I just care about your character traits. The part of the report card that talks about behavior, that I care about. I don't care about the other. And she brought me home. My daughter is very right-brained. She's very artistic. She's not at all left-brained. I mean, you know, I'm very left-brained. I got great grades. I graduated Phi Beta Kappa Magna Cum Laude. My daughter was bringing me home 40s and 50s. And that was hard for me. And I'd say, Clea, 40 in history? And she'd say, Ima, you said that you didn't care about grades. You only cared about character traits. Hope we say midot in Hebrew. And then I remember, yes, I said that. So what happened? My daughter did not, at the age of 18, when she should have gotten her high school diploma, she finished high school, but there were two courses that she failed in. So they gave her, you know, she had to like take the test again later. Now she's taking the test, she doesn't even know if she passed or not. She didn't. But what happened in the meantime, after high school, religious girls in Israel do something called national service instead of going into the army. So she did a year of national service, working for an organization that helps children. And then she got a job as a waitress with the intention that she was going to go to, we have something in Israel called the Open University, which you don't need a high school diploma for. You don't need grades or anything. Anybody can go, but it's very hard. Go means you do it at home mostly on your computer. And once a week you go in for three hours for the course. But most of it is you have to be very self-disciplined and do it at home on your computer. So anybody can get in, because if you can't make the grade, you're just going to fall out. You're not going to pass the course. So she started working as a waitress in one of very fine Jerusalem restaurant. Those of you who have been in Israel, the Ramon Cafe in the New Mamilla shopping area. Very upscale dairy restaurant. One, you know, lines waiting to get in up till midnight, you know, to get into this restaurant. She started as a waitress there. 6 months, and they had three managers. One of the managers was pregnant and she took a maternity leave and they needed another manager. And they promoted my daughter to be a manager of the Ramon Cafe at the age of 20. The other managers are 27, 28, 29 years old. She's at the age of 20, she is a manager of the Ramon Cafe because they noticed her character traits. They saw that she was very responsible, that she had good people skills, that she had a lot of integrity, that she was honest, that she could be trusted, that she was reliable. She got ahead because of her character traits. I believe, although it's fine, she started at the Open University in business management, she's taking her course in microeconomics. I believe that even without a university degree, her character traits would enable her to succeed in life. So when you ask, and this is basically what Howard Jonas is also saying, character traits are what made him a multi-billion. He says also talent and also luck, but also very important character traits. So if, God forbid, you didn't have enough money for your child's college fund, it would not be easy. But could your child succeed in life without going to college? Or what if they took years to go to night school? I know somebody, he told me this story, Mr. Davidovitz, his name is. He got married at 19, grew up in the Lower East Side, got married at 19. His wife was 18. They weren't happy. His parents weren't happy. He didn't finish high school. He left high school at the age of 15 or something, didn't even finish. He went to night school. He was married. He had children starting. A family already started. He went to night school, finished high school. He went to night school, finished college. He went to night school and did law school. He's a multimillionaire today. You know, a great guy. Can your children succeed in life without that college fund? Yes, they can. Will it be easy for them? No, it won't. But maybe the challenge of doing something that's not easy for them will build them into better human beings than they might have become had it been handed to them on a silver platter.
I see.
Okay, yes.
You mentioned that you take no pride in being a successful author because God gave you the talent.
Yeah.
But is there not a character trait that would relate to using the talents God gave you instead of squandering them and using them for good? But if you're measuring your character development on that, is it appropriate to use an external measurement, such as how many books you sold, as opposed to simply some sort of internal management of I actually wrote it, so therefore I've used my talent?
No, it would be the latter. It would be, yes, it takes persistence and being industrious to write a book, to do the research, to follow through. Yes, it does take character traits to produce a book. But whether a book is successful or not is very much in the hands of God. You know, it depends on timing. Rabbi Kellerman wrote a book on about childbearing, an excellent book. I recommend it highly for those of you who have children, A Call to Kindle a Soul. The book kept getting delayed in the publication. So that was a big drag. And then he was scheduled to come to America for a book tour, and 9/11 happened. And suddenly everybody was very interested in child-rearing techniques to deal with the terror that children were experiencing in the wake of 9/11. You know, some children were reverting to bedwetting, other things. Suddenly it became child-rearing, and the book became very successful because of the timing. So whether a book is successful or not, it really even getting an agent has to do with it's called your mazel, you know, what Hashem sends you. But to finish a book, yes, it requires, you need the qualities to finish any project. Did I answer your question? Okay.
Okay, Mr. Drieger will be here for a few minutes if you want to ask some more questions. I just want to thank you very much for, I think, a pretty hard-hitting message. But I was looking at each of you, and I think many of you have been to these classes before. We are in difficult times. I think it's an important message to be heard, and I thank you again for taking the time to come and listen to it. What I'm going to encourage you to do is to take something out of today and to actually make something happen. I happen to enjoy teaching building character traits and improving your character traits. We do this on campus. I've done this up in the suburbs. I've done this downtown. If any of you are interested, maybe this would be a good opportunity, a springboard, to start a group downtown or up in the suburbs. I would be happy to help you. There's programs online that you can do. I'm encouraging you not to take whatever motivation you have from this lecture and just let it dissipate. Make this a starting point of something. And there are probably people out there that are struggling, maybe even more than you are, but have never heard anything like this before. So they are people that I can't reach, but they're people that you can reach. I'm encouraging you. I'll try to put this online or make copies and you can give it to them. You have an opportunity of being an ambassador, of sharing something that is our legacy. What Mrs. Riegler is talking about, this is something that we have believed in for 3,000 years. And unfortunately, many, many people, and I see this more and more on college campuses, are just completely unaware of this message. So I'm not putting too much responsibility on you by saying it's your responsibility. But if you happen to know someone or you have an opportunity, don't just keep it to yourself, pass it on. So I do look forward to
Rabbi Khan, I forgot I have a great story to end with.
Okay,
and I forgot
ahead.
To tell it, okay? It's a 2-minute story, but it's very, very germane to our subject and to this lunch and learn. It's a story about the Hafez Chaim. The Hafez Chaim was one of the, probably the biggest rabbi of the 20th century. And he lived in a place called Radin in Poland. The whole shtetl was made of wooden structures. Every few years, lightning struck one structure and the whole town burned down because they were all right next to each other. This happened a lot in Europe, with shtetls, just the whole town burned at one time. So he decided at one point he wanted to rebuild the yeshiva. He had a yeshiva there for Torah learning. He wanted to rebuild the yeshiva in brick. A brick building that wouldn't burn, right? Good idea. So he went to the richest Jew in town, a man who had a very profitable business, and he asked him for money to build a brick yeshiva, money for Torah learning. And the man said, no. I said, I don't have any liquid funds right now. I can't give you any money right now, but I'll remember you in my will. I promise I'll leave money to the yeshiva in my will. So, fine, the Hafez Chaim left, okay. 2 years later, World War I broke out. World War I decimated the Jewish communities of Poland. First, the Germans came in, then the Russians and the Bolsheviks. Everybody lost everything, including this man. And the Jews also fled. They fled east, and then they came back after the war was over. They came back. So the Chafetz Chaim was on his way back to Radin, and on his way back, he didn't stay in hotels or inns even. He stayed for free in synagogues. You could go into the synagogue and sleep on the bench in the synagogue. So he came into a certain synagogue in a certain town, and there was that man who had been so wealthy before, now totally destitute. He had lost everything, lying on a bench. And the Chafetz Chaim didn't want to embarrass him, like to see him in his current state of destitution. So he just kind of, like, you know, tiptoed over to the other side of the synagogue. But the man noticed the Chafetz Chaim, and he came over to him, and he said, "Rabbi, I have a complaint against you." And the Chafetz Chaim said, "What did I do?" And he said, "When you came and you asked me for money for the yeshiva, for Torah learning, and I said no, you should have ripped the money from my hands, because then I would have something now. You have the spiritual merit of Torah. And instead I have nothing." So this, in terms of having a spiritual goal versus a material goal, and in our present economy, I thought this was a good story to end with. Thank you.